Well, it's so nice to see all of you here. I wasn't sure who would show up. This is already a great Christmas present, so I appreciate it. So Merry Christmas to all of you, to your families, and to those who, for various reasons, cannot be here or choose not to be here. God blesses them all this night with his kindness and with his mercy, so it's good to gather in the way that we are, such as it is right now. As I always say, there's a lot we could say about the feast of Christmas, about our readings, especially the gospel. Lots been said already over 2,000 years. And one always tries, I suppose, on Christmas to land on just what exactly is the meaning of Christmas. That's always the question, isn't it? And the readings do get at that. It's true, obviously. And I guess, to kind of get at it, with all the layers of theology and everything else, there might be one good way, I guess, this year to kind of bring it down to call it a fine point, okay, about what it means to think that God is born, that God becomes man. That's called the incarnation. He becomes flesh. So that's what Christmas is about. He becomes man and he's born and he appears to the world. So all that's going on. So what does that mean? To get at it, maybe I'll just land on what might be called the lesser known figures of the Christmas story that we just got done hearing. These are things that don't tend to make it onto the Hallmark cards that you all send around, you know, with Mary and Joseph and stable and manger and animals, a lot of which actually isn't even in the text if you really pay close attention to it. But what isn't here, though, are a couple of names and events that are very important, which don't make it onto Christmas cards. I've never seen them yet, anyway. But they do ground us in the reality of the feast day, and I think in this year especially, in a very important way. So they would be these, and I'll read the opening line again because they're all right here in the opening sentence. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole world should be enrolled. This is the first enrollment when Quirinius was governor of Syria. So all went to be enrolled. So that's it. That's Christmas right there. Are you all excited so far? Your hearts are lifting. I can see it right here in front of me. So Caesar Augustus and Quirinius, governor of Syria, those are the two figures that I want to just mention. And the fact that there was an enrollment, which is also known as a census. Okay? Why? Luke, as he writes his beautiful gospel text, is trying to do lots of different things. One thing for sure he wants to do is he wants to make the point for Christians who hear him in his current day, and all who follow after him, that's all of us, because we're the ones who follow after him, that Jesus, as Savior and Lord, is born in a specific time and a specific place. He's born in a time and a place, so he's historical. God enters into specific circumstances in a location, at a date, at a place in human history. So to say that God is man and born as man means that he dives into human history with all of its messiness, all of its fullness. There's no escaping it, right? So these figures are mentioned because it grounds Jesus in history. It's not an abstract story. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a myth. He was a real person living under real rulers in a time period and in a place. The same thing for Mary and Joseph. They're not fairy tale figures. They had to go about their life and their duties under the governorship and rulership of these people, these figures, Caesar and Quirinius. Okay? Quirinius, by the way, is disputed historically by the dating of this. Luke may have got a smidge wrong, but there's no question Caesar Augustus was, in fact, ruling in Rome at the time, so we are pretty close to accurate in these details. Okay. Now, the Christians at the time, listening to the story of Jesus' birth, might have said, well, why are their names in here? They're not even Christians. They are pagans. That one of them, as an emperor, thought of himself as a god. Why put him and corrupt this beautiful text with the names of pagan rulers? The answer is because that's what Jesus lived under, and that's who Mary and Joseph lived under. They had to go to work and raise a child and have a family and live their life in the time period of these people. It's part of the story. And God wanted it that way. He wanted them in the story. So at a certain time, at a certain place, in a certain year, God enters the world. And also, a certain set of circumstances leads him to enter the world in a certain way. The enrollment, the census. Why is the census even in this story at all? Because Luke has to make the point that somehow Mary and Joseph, who live in Nazareth, have to get to where? To Bethlehem, because the Savior must be born there. And what is the mechanism that's going to get them there? It's going to be a census, an enrollment. It's going to get them to Bethlehem. So these pagan rulers, and this is Luke's point, without even realizing it, are bringing about God's will with a secular decree. He's trying to say, just by being pagan rulers and counting people, unwittingly, they're actually proclaiming that God's designs are powerful and more important than their designs. Because what's God doing? He's using the circumstances and using these rulers to bring about things to get himself born in where? Bethlehem, because he must be born there. So Luke, what's he trying to say? Leaders, circumstances, places, all part of God's plan. Without it, he's not born properly. And when he is born, he's born into our human circumstances, no exceptions, even a census. How about that? Okay? The church has said forever and ever, okay, that one of our deepest theological truths of nativity of Jesus Christ, of Christmas, the incarnation, is that Jesus seeks to be born not just once, but over and over again. He wants to be born in every single year, over and over again. There's no breaking that, stopping that. He is born no matter what, no matter when, no matter where. It's not just a one-time thing. It happens every single year, all the time. Which means, okay, we can place ourselves in the story in the same way. If Luke were going to rewrite the Christmas story for 2020, how would he do it? He would begin it in the same kind of a manner. He'd say in the year 2020, when President Trump was president or outgoing in this country, and Joseph Biden was incoming in this country, when Tony Evers was governor of Wisconsin, when Christoph was mayor of West Bend, Jesus Christ is born. We might say to ourselves, well, I don't like those names. I don't even like those people. Why are they in our Christmas story? I don't like Donald Trump. I don't like Joe Biden. I don't like Tony Evers. Maybe you don't like the mayor. I don't know. He's been pretty low key, I think. But maybe you don't like him. But the point is, why are they in here? The answer is because God is born with them in the story. There's no taking them out of it. If he's born in history, and he's born in 2020, he's born with these people leading us. And he wanted it that way. In the year 2020, there was a census. Isn't that something? In the year 2020, okay, there was an impeachment a long time ago, seems like ages ago. There was a whole spring shutdown of masses and an outbreak of a pandemic, which we're obviously still dealing with. There was, an election along the way. We all remember that. Economic challenges. I mean, it's been hard, right? But all of that is to get us to Bethlehem. The church would say to us, like Lewis says back then, look, none of this is an accident. We must understand that God is born in all of that. He's born in every single one of those details. So Christmas means, okay, part one, there's a small part two also. Part one, it means that nothing in history is outside of God's designs or providence or plans. If you think it was easy in the year zero in Bethlehem, you're wrong. There was a governor they didn't like. There was an evil king who was reigning. There was a pagan emperor in Rome. There were famines, and there were plagues, and there were wars, and there was starvation, and there was death, and there was misery, and it was hard. And Joseph and Mary were real people who didn't have any idea what was going on most of the time. Yet when it all got done, they wound up in the right spot for the kid to get born where he was supposed to. It all kind of worked out. But it wasn't easy along the way. 2020 is no different. The church says he's born now with these rulers, in these circumstances, in this time, in this place. Never, ever doubt that God is here. He is concrete. He's in the details. That's what it means for God to become man. He is in the details of our daily existence. Never, ever think that he is distant or isn't paying attention, because once he entered into history, he's in it to the very end. He has been with us all the way through 2020, whether you saw it or not. He's been with us all the while. So is he born in 2020? Yes. Just as he was back then. Just as he was back then, same thing. Now, question part two is exactly how does that work? I mean, because isn't he only like born once, Father? Well, sort of. How is it that he is born in this particular year exactly? It is, in fact, in all the ways I just described, that's true, but it has become even more personal than that, because all that's still a little bit on the abstract side, right? And God is not abstract. God is hyper-real, hyper-concrete, hyper-detail-oriented. You think I'm detail-oriented. God is hyper-detail-oriented. So how exactly is he born again right now in every single year? It goes kind of like this, okay? Bear with me. He is born to the extent that each of us chooses to accept his will for us and his circumstances for us as something that he desires for us. I'll say that again. He is born to the extent that each of us chooses to accept that our circumstances, whatever they are his will and his desire for us as we surrender to his will, as we hand ourselves over to his will, as we hand ourselves over to what he wants and his plan in our hearts. That's how he is born anew. Why is Bethlehem such a peaceful place? Because, not so much because Jesus was there, although yes, but what is Jesus? He is surrender. He is perfect obedience. He is perfect submission to his Father's will. He is the perfect acceptance of circumstances, and in that way he is peace and he is joy. In that way God becomes one of us because he assents to the plan. So here's how this works. I'll give you an example. This afternoon I'm sitting here in church. I'm praying about this evening and my life. And I'm thinking about 2020, such as it was and is. And, you know, Christmas stuff and COVID things and budget things and emails and, I mean, it's a mess, right? Here we all are. But the thing of it is, okay, I found myself saying in my prayer, God, you desire all this for me. You want this for me. This is the priesthood that you wanted for me. 2020, with this church, with these people, and these staff, and these emails, and these problems, and, you know, my sinuses that are bad, and this and that. I mean, what you pick the details, you wanted this for me. You desired this for me, just like this. Not some parallel universe, not some other world I imagine, not what I might want it to be, not what it was last year. Frankly, who cares? This one. You wanted this. And I can fight against it, or I can accept it. And as I accept it, you are born in my heart, because I'm accepting your will and your plan, like Jesus did perfectly once upon a time and does forevermore. Same thing for you. Each of you has to do the same thing. What does Christmas mean? How is he going to get born? Each of us has to prayerfully sit back and consider our households and our jobs and our marriages and our families and our friendships and our occupations and our homework. Whatever it is that the stew of our life right now, we all come tonight with all this stuff that we bring that's percolating in our heads and our hearts and our lives. And we have to say to God with complete sincerity, I know that you desire this for me. I might not always want it, I don't always get it, but I must trust that it's your plan. And all of it is designed somehow to get me to Bethlehem. That's the point. And if we can accept that 2020 and all that comes with it is part of his will, then we'll have peace in our hearts. If we get angry about it and fight and raise holy hell inside of us, there will not be joy, there will not be peace, he will not be born. It's just going to be a conflict and an argument. And in the end, you know what? God always wins. That's how it goes. So Christmas means, okay, long story short, He is in, born into, the gritty details to the extent that we accept them. That's the peace of Bethlehem. That's the joy of Bethlehem. I'm not saying that we roll over and take it all. Of course not. I'm not saying we don't fight the good fight for goodness in the world. Of course. But we do have to understand that things come to us for a reason. And God desires all the specifics for very important reasons. He wanted Bethlehem for a reason, and he moved earthly powers to get his son born there. He wants us to be here tonight just like it is for a reason. And only he knows, God knows, what it is. But he does know. He does know. So I think that's Christmas, right? And this year, I think, in its own beautiful, mysterious way, brings it home really, really well. God is born not on a postcard, not on a Christmas card, not in the abstract. He's born now in the details of my life and your life to the extent that I accept them with open hands and an open heart. And that way, I'm a stable, a manger, I am Bethlehem, and I am the peace of God that the world needs to see. And that way he's born in me and he's born in you. Merry Christmas.